The following is an unrehearsed interview with Mr. Charles Garland by Debbie Wilson for the Kentucky Oral History Commission. The interview was conducted at the Rebecca Caudill Library, Cumberland, Kentucky, on June the 22nd, 1978, at 11:45 a.m. Mr. Garland, the first thing I want to start with is just your full name.
My full name, Charles Sumner Garland.
Well, where were you born?
I was born in Hamlin, Kentucky. That's up on the territory of Stinking Creek.
Now, where is it? Where don't tell me. Yeah.
Well, Stinking Creek is comprises a good portion of Knox County, and Hamlin was the post office on Road Fork. We got about three major forks of that.
So you're a native Knox County in then?
That's
okay,
right.
I know where Knox County is. Now, what year were you born?
1904.
Well, who are you married to?
I'm married to Alice Flannery.
How many children do you have?
Two.
When did you come here to Cumberland?
Well, I came to Cumberland off and on. I came to Harlan County in 1924 to teach school. And I taught school on the head of Clover Fork till attendance got down till Mr. Jones, Abner Jones, was county superintendent. He sent me to Black Joe. Black Joe is a little mining camp, pretty close to Kitts. And I stayed there 2 years, and it got down to a one-room school. And I asked for a change, and they sent me to Blair, that's above here. I moved here in 32, and our oldest child was born here in 32. And I stayed here from 32 to 35. We had a political squabble over some schools, and I went back to my old stamping ground on head of Clover Fork again. I stayed there till 38, went to Shields. And I stayed there 1 year. I went to what's now Holmes Mill. I stayed there till the war broke out. I wanted to make more money, so I left and went to Baltimore. I went from Baltimore to Oak Ridge, and from Oak Ridge I got a pretty good offer to come back home, so I came back home. In the meantime, we had a shift of postmasters over there at Holmes Mill. I told the postmaster there to look out for me a job, and we thought Glenbrook was going to have a post office, but that didn't develop. So, meantime, this postmaster on the mill had a little bad stroke, and the doctor told him to get out. So he resigned and had me appointed as postmaster in 1945. And I stayed there 26 years. I taught school 19 years at that time. And my wife did the work. I had to play politics.
Oh, you taught school at the same time that you were postmaster?
That's right.
Well, now, you gave me a list to look at, and it had different postmasters and things for Cumberland.
That's right.
Now, it has post offices established, discontinued, reestablished, and all this. Just what does this mean? Why did they stop the post office and start it again?
Well, now, I've watched a few post offices discontinued, but I never have seen a post office discontinued and reestablished. But the head of Clover Fork, when I came to Harlan County, they had a Clover Fork post office, and they had a Clover post office. Clover was located on Clover Lake. Clover Fork was on the head of Clover Fork. That's in 24. All right, in 26 then, they put another post office down Holmes Mill. And the post office at Holmes Mill grew, and the Clover Fork post office got less people. People moved out gradually. So in 1936, they discontinued the Clover Fork post office and merged it with the Holmes Mill post office. See, there was a period of 10 years there, from 26 to 36, that Holmes Mill was growing and the Clover Fork post office going down. So, Holmes Mill Post Office was the only one in existence over there after 36.
You mentioned play in politics. I think that was how you
That's
said
right.
it. Now, in being postmaster, you had the play politics.
That's right.
Just how'd you get your job?
Well, I got my job because this postmaster was a pretty good local politician. He knew the county officers and so on. So, when you're supposed to post this vacancy in a conspicuous place, he put it where a tall man has to rear back to see it, way up on it there. See, he's playing favoritism. So I got my commission pretty easy. Now, the reason I took it instead of giving it to my wife, I had more college work than she had, and I thought it would be easier. And the post office at that time paid $30 a month. The salary was made out annually, $360 a year. So we could have existed on that, but that was all. So my salary as school teacher was getting better, you see. And my wife could pick up somebody to help her if necessary, cheaper than I could afford to put my time to it. And another thing about that, when you're there, you're responsible. And those people, I had to get acquainted with them again. I was acquainted with them on a school teacher basis. But the man that talks the most pleasant is sometimes the hardest man to get a debt, you see. And you've got to do a certain amount of credit. And I wanted to surround that. I didn't like to face that responsibility. So I helped my wife what I could in the afternoon and Saturdays and so on. And I drove a school bus a little bit. Drove a school bus and stayed busy.
I must not understand the postal situation. You do credit in the post office?
No, that's in the grocery store.
I
skipped that. Now, the fourth class officers, nearly all of them, have a grocery store or something. We had this... I refused the post office until this man agreed to sell me the grocery store. Our inventory at the grocery store was less than $300. Most we got was patent medicine, shoestrings, and razor blades. And Codell Construction Company was moving in at that time. You know these patent medicines, all of them recommended for a cold. So the closest doctor was about 7 miles away. So those men bought that patent medicine. And the razor blades were rationed. So we got rid of the razor blades and the patent medicine pretty soon. And the shoestrings took care of themselves. We finally got rid of them. All right. I don't remember our cash sale, but anyway, this sale tax came on later. And we didn't have an elaborate system of keeping books. This fellow gave me the option of paying sale tax on what I took in the cash register, or if we wanted to keep a thorough record, they called it an accrual record. See, we paid sale tax on another way. So I chose the easy way out, pay sale tax on what went through the cash register. All right, as I told you, this store ran less than $300 inventory when we bought it. The last year that we was there, we totaled a little bit more than $48,000 going through the cash register. When we went there, the post office paid $360 a year. It paid around $6,000.
When did you give up the store and the post office?
1971.
That when you retired?
Yeah.
Now, tell me about your teaching experiences.
Well, at the time I began to teach, this old system, you was issued what they called a local certificate. That was in the teens. You was issued what they call a local certificate, and the county superintendent was the whole thing. In other words, a county superintendent could give you a certificate if he wanted to, regardless. See? And you made 3 grades of certificates, first, second, and third. Well, I never went to school in a graded school to a teacher that ever had any high school. None of it. Well, when I was 16, I could walk across the mountain about 2 miles if I could get a job, which I thought I could. They'd use a boy like me, maul staves 10 hours a day for $1.25 at 12.5 cents an hour. And you worked that time, too. So, my brother, in 1920, they passed a law. 1920, the legislature passed a law that these teachers were to send their examination papers to Frankfort to be graded. Took it out of the county superintendent's hands. And so my brother got a certificate, and it was good statewide. But he taught 1920, and he made $75 a month. Divide that by 20 and get $3.75 a day, where I'd be working longer for $1.25. So I went and took a course, they called it Cram Normal. You memorize the president's cabinet and other important facts, which I didn't understand. But anyway, they called it Cram Normal, and they had 2 specialists in Barberville that just crammed it to you, and it's up to you to memorize it. So I hear the midnight train run more often than I fail to. And I came out in 1921, started taking the examination, got so excited I just quit. I had 2 pencils and a pocket knife and a handkerchief, and I sharpened those pencils, and golly, I was really nervous and shaky. And I got so far behind, I decided to quit. All right, then, that was in May. They had another examination in June. And in June, I summed up enough courage to stay through the examination, and I got a second class certificate. Thought I'd teach 2 years and go into something else. Well, I did it out around those 2 years. That fucked up to 1923. And I went to take the examination in 23, and you didn't have a Chinaman's chance to come to Harlan County unless you had a first class certificate. So I got a first class certificate in 1923. Finished out in school in Knox County at $65 a month. And I came to Harlan County the next year. They invited me to come to Harlan County to give me a 1-room school. I guess everybody else refused. There's an old man over there by the name of Alan Farley. When he wanted the school, he'd moved to Pulaski County. When he wanted the school, he got it. When he wouldn't have it, I got it. See? So happened to be one of these years he didn't want to come back, so I got to school up there. And I got a boost in salary from 65 to 105. All right, I liked the people. They were more of my kind and general. You know. And I stayed there till 1930. In 1930, my wife was working up here in what Miss Wells calls Clutch, Luna Creek Commissary. And we got married in 1930. And I was transferred to Black Joe. Now this little girl we're talking about, Juanita Krepp, she went to school with me old Brown, hit a clove for it. It was made a statement she went to school with me, which I doubt that. Because she came over there to go to school in the 3rd grade. She was a pretty little girl and smart. And it's always been my policy. When you get a pretty girl and a smart girl, don't let up on them, push them, because their beauty will attract the opposite sex. First thing you know, we've got a case of puppy love. And their intelligence also will attract. You see my point? So, if you've got a smart girl and a pretty girl, push it. Pick up your car. Keep your mind off of that boy. So, Juanita went to school to me. She finished it. She was supposed to finish the 3rd grade, but she was so smart I put her in the 4th. All right. She went through the 4th, and I was transferred. Juanita was transferred. And instead of putting her in the 5th, in order to get Juanita in my end of the building at Black Joe, I put her in the 6th. She went there a couple of months, and she she was too smart to retain. So I promoted Juanita to the 7th grade. And I contacted her teacher in Knox County. Now they take some credit down in Knox County. I contacted her teacher down there. He was another stinking Greek fellow. So I said, now you're going to have a fine little girl in your school this year. That she'll make an impression on you that she's ready for the 8th grade, but she's not. Now, I've over-promoted her, get her to the 7th, don't you put her in the 8th. So Clint got her in the 8th, and she failed in the 8th. And I was living in Cumberland when she came back to Cumberland, King State Grade Cumberland. And I saw her here. I found that story from one evening.
Where did she finish school?
Well, I lost track of her there. She went to school to back to the, she went to boarding school, I think, for high school, I believe that's right. Then she went to Berea College, and she finished school down at Berea College. And then she went to, she was working the World Manpower Commission in World War II. But the next report I heard about her, she was at Duke University. She was dean of women over there first, and then she was vice president when she got this Secretary of Commerce place. She's a live wire.
So now she is Secretary of Commerce.
That's right. You hear various reports, but I was very well acquainted with her father. Her father was a brainy character, but he didn't say much about it. And they lived up here when Juanita was born. Her father was a bookkeeper up here at Pen Creek, like Miss Phillips said. He also operated a dairy up there where the country club is, where you went up there to eat yesterday. Her father had a dairy herd there. He sold that dairy herd to J.H. Galloway. I worked for J.H. Galloway for $50 a month during the 34. I worked for him for $50 a month, 12 hours a day, out here in the little milk house. That was between schools. 12 hours a day for $50 a month. And of course there wasn't much work to it. I've always been used to working hard. It's piddling. And there's a difference in that. And I didn't know how to piddle. I got the job, Arthur Creech, that old man's been there. He got me that job because I was honest. The other fellows hadn't been giving him the money that was given. And he wanted me to balance my books. But I didn't. I'd over all the time. And he was a Bowling Green Business University man, so he wanted me to balance my books. And he said, "Garland, you're all time over." I said, "How did that happen?" I said, "Well, I'll be back here helping these boys load a truck or something, and they'll sell a quart of milk or a half a gallon up front. And whenever they get back there, I call on them for the money. And I don't carry any money on them." I said, "In the afternoon, when I get ready to leave, all the money I've got in my pocket is yours. But when I come back up here to the office, maybe I've forgotten about that money. So I don't put it down. But in the afternoon, when I get ready to go home, what money I have in my pocket is yours, and that's where you have it." I said, "What did you do before I came here?" He said, "I didn't get any money." So I guess I gave him around somewhere between $60 and $100 a month like this. And I was getting $50, so I feel like I was more profit than less expense. And a good experience for me.
Good name, too. Well, I want to talk now a little bit about teacher training. You said that you just took this CRAM course. Did you ever go to any university or college?
Yeah. I went, now it's common practice. That was in 21. Then I went to high school. They issued a certificate then on 2 years of what they call normal school. Now my brother, younger than I, got a certificate like that. And then of course, I went on to high school, college. I graduated from high school twice. I went to the Bartlett Baptist Institute, graduated there, and then Union College Academy, graduated BBI in 1925, graduated from Union College Academy in 26, and went to college during my spare time. I had training at the University of Kentucky, Eastern University, Union College, and University of Michigan, Maryland.
Well, now, what degree do you hold now?
None. Don't have any.
You don't. You just had training, but
that's right.
No degree.
That's right.
Well, now, about what year do you remember when they started? Like nowadays, teachers have to have a master's degree in so long a time. Now, when did they start forcing teachers to have more formal training?
Forcing teachers to have more formal training. I'd say in the late 20s. Now, my brother began teaching in 24. That's the year I came to Harlan County on my first class certificate. He started in that year with two years of high school certificate. And then the pressure has increased and discontinued the teacher examination in the 30s. I'd say early 30s. Don't remember the year.
Well, what subjects did you teach? I mean, were you qualified to teach everything?
I wasn't qualified, but I had to teach it. All the subjects in all 8 grades.
Well, now, you talk about this 2-year high school. What did they have 8 grades and then 2 more years, and then later on it became the 4-year system? Is that?
Well, no, the 4 years was available, but to be certified, you had to have 2 years. They call it normal training, which was you got high school credit.
Oh, once you got this high school credit, then you could go back and teach.
That's right.
Okay. What about when you got the extra 2 years of high school?
Well, it was just, you just got a high school diploma, and you had to have your certificate renewed about every 2 years. First one is just 2-year certificate, and then the next one, of course, you'd be through ordinarily like that, but a teacher just got about a half year's credit. He had to finish up and leave out. He had to teach during the first semester, and the second semester in summer school was always available.
Well, how long did the students have to go to school? I mean, how long, each day?
Oh.
Do they go about like now?
Well, we ordinarily took up at 8 and dismissed at 4 with 2 15-minute recesses and an hour.
Well, what about the school year, the length?
Well, the first year I taught, we had a 6-month school, and it was a 7-month school. I don't remember when they discontinued that, but it was still a 7-month school when I got married. And now the mining camp schools, they had 9-month school there ordinarily because, see, the coal company supplemented. If it wasn't direct, it was indirect. In other words, in the 20s, Harlan County paid the highest salary in the state for school teachers. It was through the fiscal court that they did that. See, that most of our pay came through the fiscal court of the county, not the state. Now, the state had a supplement there, but what percentage, I don't know. But now, the bulk of the teacher salary comes from the state. But then the bulk of the teacher salary came through the fiscal court. We had Pauper County. Knox County happened to be one of those things. And Harlan County, the coal operators, was the backbone of the school system.
So that it was the coal companies was
That's
the reason that Harlan could have such
That's
fine
right.
schools. Well, now, the last couple, 3 winters, we've had a real weather problem, in the. So what did you all do when you had this bad weather. Did you have winters as bad as we've had, like in the last 2 and 3 years?
Well, I believe we did. For instance, in 35 and 6 or 36 and 7, we had an awfully cold winter. Well, our children just didn't get to school, but if a teacher couldn't get there, it was awful. We call it cooning across a log whenever it's so slick you couldn't walk it. That's the way I got to my school one winter. I'd get a straddle of that log and coon across there. There's one way of going, that's a fall off like you're going off of a mule, you know. But I was afraid to be absent. I suppose some of those children got there without any fire. It'd been awful, wasn't it?
So you were required to get out and go despite the weather?
My conscience wouldn't let me stay away from there. I needed to be there for various reasons. I've always looked at a teacher as a substitute parent, and I felt a responsibility. Rain or snow, I went to school house.
Well, did you have very many students that would show up in this bad weather?
I recall, I believe I had 11 students one time. One day it was outrageously cold and slick, and I believe we had 11. But we didn't have many students, but what was there had assurance they were going to be warm. We kept a big old pot-bellied stove. Most time made hot.
Well, what the, now we have lunch rooms, you know, everybody goes to the cafeteria for lunch. What did people do for lunch then, the students?
They brought it from home.
Sack lunch? I mean, just packed it?
Anyway, I've seen children come to school and milk sour. We didn't have any refrigeration. Milk and sour and blow the stopper out of the bottle. And they bring some. But anyway, we got that.
What kind of things did they bring?
Some of them bring plain old milk and bread in a, I call it a lard bucket. And some of them would bring a biscuit and something to go with that biscuit. And some of them didn't.
They didn't have potato chips and sandwiches.
No, they didn't have access to any of that stuff. I left Black Joe because, as I told you a while ago, it came down to one teacher school. And I'm not exaggerating. Those children would cry for something. And I went to Mr. Jones, Abner Jones, county superintendent. I said, Mr. Jones, I have to work. But if there's any other place in the county for me to go, I'll go around and go to Black Joe. See, that was a mining camp, and the superintendent moved in. The superintendent of the mines, there had been superintendent of the mines, he was still there. And he just gave free house rent to the scalawags. And we filled up that Black Joe camp with the refuse of other camps. And it was miserable. So they transferred me to Blair. That was, these people at Blair, they live luxuriously compared to what I left at Black Joe.
Excuse me just a minute, I'm going to turn this tape over. This is side two of an interview with Mr. Charles Garland. Now, Mr. Garland, you were speaking, you went to Blair. Now, where's Blair?
Blair is about 2 miles out of Cumberland going toward Whitesburg. On the Whitesburg Road.
Okay, now, and the situation in Blair, you said, was very different?
Yeah, it was good. The economic conditions were exceptionally good compared to what I left at Black Joe.
Well, now, I don't understand, why did Black Joe allow this type of people to come in there? Was there no one else to work the mine there? Or?
Well, the mines had quit working, and the houses were available. And I don't know whether this man was just careless or whether he had a big heart, but he let the people fill up the houses from other camps.
Now, why didn't their children have anything to eat?
Well,
they didn't work?
The parents didn't have any work. This was the beginning of the Depression. And the children. One time, Mr. Jones, Alvin Jones, told me to bring a half a dozen children down there, and he would, he said, "You have the children ready, a half a dozen of them, and I'll send a truck up and get them." Well, he said the neediest children. Well, I didn't ask anybody. I took the raggedest children to be the neediest children. So I picked up a group of children. There's eight of the children instead of a half a dozen. I took eight. And some of them were almost barefooted. Their stockings were dangling out the soles of their shoes. And these children really looked like part of that. Well, one boy was about 16, big old barefooted boy. So I took him down there, and Mr. Jones, I told him I fudged over on him a little bit. He said, "That's all right. We'll take him down here and get him some shoes and stockings." And he did. But when I went back, there's one man, he'd moved from Coxton to Black Joe, and he had two nice little girls, well-dressed. And he said, "There's something wrong here." He said, "Some of them went to Harlan yesterday and got some shoes and stockings, and my children weren't invited." I said, "Your children weren't here yesterday." But I said, "I just picked up the children that looked the neediest and took them." Well, he didn't like that much. He said, "One of the parents work at Kids, and one of them draws a pension." I didn't know which one was which. But when I found out the ones that went to Kits, man got 2 days on the tipple when the mines worked four. And if the mines worked 2 days, he got one on the tipple. And he had a pretty good sized family. All right, the man that that drew the pension, he got $12 a month, veterans pay. And he was gone to Tennessee when I took his little daughter down there to get her some shoes. And he spent that $12 that he got, I mean, he took it with him. He was trying to pay expenses down in Tennessee, getting a farm ready to move to. That was unknown to me until after I'd come back.
Now, you mentioned Kits. What's Kits?
Well, Kits is a little, I'd call it a little mine right out of Harlan on Clove Fork. The Kits School is, at that time, was combined with Harlan City School, just a branch of Harlan City School.
Well, you'd mentioned the Depression too. What happened during the Depression here in Harlan County to you as an educator?
Well, our education corresponded to the economic conditions around us. As I've told you, the teachers were paid largely out of the funds contributed by the coal company here through the fiscal court. And when we didn't have any work, we didn't have any money accumulated. See, the coal companies, when they didn't operate, they didn't make any money. Now what was carried over was all that was available.
But your schools were able to carry on?
My salary was reduced from $115 a month to $85, I'd say.
But did you just feel fortunate to be working at all?
Yeah. And then I took another job in the Cumberland system in 34. Well, I thought I'd draw equally as much pay because of the bigger school and so on. But instead of getting my salary at Blair, my salary was reduced to $70-some a month. So I asked the county superintendent, Mr. Jones, I said, "What happened there?" Well, he said, "Charles, at the beginning of the year, every teacher is on an allotment based on their qualifications." And said, "When you took this girl's job, you took her allotment. And your qualifications is better than hers. Your allotment was more than hers." So I could understand that. See, even though she was in a bigger school, she had fewer college hours than I had. So accept her allotment, and I accept her job.
Well, how would you say that Harlan County compared to other areas during the Depression?
I believe Harlan County was hit harder than the other places because we didn't produce as much food as other places. And I believe we called him Jojo in the funny paper, said there'll be a lot of fat, ragged farmers. So we couldn't get fat. We didn't produce the food. The farmer couldn't sell his food. He had to eat it. So I'd say we were hit harder than the average place. Wouldn't you say so?
I see.
Did anybody actually starve to death here?
No, don't think so.
Well, there's all these mountains here. Don't you have any animals? I mean, couldn't you go out and shoot some?
That's really a big question. We've got men, a very few men, before they restricted digging the ginseng, could make more money digging ginseng than a lot of men could make on the farm in these surrounding counties, because ginseng been a pretty good thing. But, you know, you can't dig ginseng except in certain times of year. And animals, there's just not enough animals to feed the people.
Did anybody actually starve to death?
No, not that I know about.
Did you have soup and soup lines?
Well, now, at Black Joe, we had a group of people came from New York down there, and they gave meal tickets to about, I believe it was 19 children, I'm not sure. But they picked out the skinniest children in school, you know, like I was picking the raggedest ones. They picked out the skinniest children, most undernourished. And I had a big old fat girl in my class. Her mother was dead, so I kind of, as I told you, I felt like a substitute parent anyway. So I had compassion, you might say, for that girl. And she wasn't the most brilliant girl you could think about, but she knew enough to know when she got hungry, and she cried like a spanked child some days. And I never did keep a meal ticket. I always gave all of them out, so these little skinny ones happened to be absent. I'd give out the meal tickets. Now, I picked up this, you might call it food, in Harlan. I lived in Harlan, so I'd pick that up at a certain restaurant over there. These people made arrangements for it to be there. And then we had a couple of women in the community that we served. And these children that got a meal ticket, they was eligible. The one that didn't have a meal ticket wasn't eligible. So I never did let it pass without giving out all the meal tickets. Because anybody don't have to get skinny to get hungry.
Well, what was the impression, well, your own impression, the impression of others here in Harlan County, of Roosevelt? I mean, when you think of the Depression, or at least when I think of the Depression, I think of Roosevelt. I mean, how did he affect the people here? You know, he initiated all these programs.
Well, he got more credit than he deserved, I believe. But he really got a lot of credit. That's the reason we've changed from a Republican county to a Democratic county. Roosevelt played a big, big factor in there. John L. Lewis organizing the mines, and Roosevelt, you know, backed him, and so on. Now, those two people made Harlan County a Democratic county instead of a Republican county. Is that the way you see it?
Yeah, they had a whole lot to do with it.
Now, one fellow talking about Roosevelt, he said, "I'm not saying he's great as Christ, but he's just about it." So he was really a Roosevelt man.
Well, can you think of any other things about the Depression that you can remember that you'd like to tell?
Well, I lived up here on the hill where I looked down the railroad every day, and they had a passenger train up here every day. And if it hadn't been for that passenger train, we didn't have enough freight to keep the track from rusting. Little narrow strip right on top of that rail was bright. The rest of it was rusty. We didn't have enough freight in here to keep the rust off of the rails, was my impression. Because we had a passenger train here run, profit or non-profit. I guess it was non-profit, but maybe.
Did people try to leave Harlan? I mean, was there any place better to go, or did they think that there was any place better to go?
Well, I don't believe it. I recall any, you might say, they didn't move out much, did they? now, of all this place we've been talking about, Lynch has been since 24, when I came up here and I found out a little bit about it. It's been a, you might say, the Eden of Harlan County. Lynch has been a mine that's been well worked. It's had the best market for the coal and so on, and attracted some of the best people.
Okay, we'll go back now to the school system. Now, did everybody walk to school back in the 20s, 30s?
When I went to Blair, they had a school bus. The school bus started at Benham. And I rode the school bus to Blair from here.
Now, what year was this that they had their school bus?
Let's see, 32. Started in 32 and I left in 34. Left Blair in 34.
Now, I think of these children, maybe I've got the wrong impression, but I think of children as living off in hollows and things up here. Did everybody try to come out to school, or did a lot of children just stay away from school?
Well, nearly all of them came. Now, I recall seeing children. We got to the schoolhouse before daylight when I rode the school bus. And I recall seeing a fire build up beside the road where the children were staying warm by fire till the school bus got there, and they just left the fire burning, see, and any damage. So, out from here at Blair, not a whole lot of that, but it did happen.
And at the time you started teaching, did the state provide the textbooks, or were children required to buy their own?
Children were required to buy them. It, later that we had free textbooks.
So even in the elementary schools,
that's
they had
right.
They couldn't have been very expensive, I don't imagine, but were they expensive for the time, let's say that?
I don't think so. Now, my dad got a set of books in 1915. We came back from Oklahoma in 1914. That's when school started in 1915. My dad got a set of books from an older brother. All right, I got into those books before they wore out, and I believe that the speller was 15 cents. I believe that's right. So the school books were not too expensive. That same set of books accommodated my older brother and me and my younger brother. I know it accommodated those three of us. And then I had two younger sisters, and I'm confident they studied some of them. Now, I don't know whether they studied all of them or not.
Well, just what can you think about changes in education just through the years from the time you started teaching to the time you retired? Just different things that changed. How did they strike you?
Well, I try to be broad mind enough to give everybody justice. We've lost some virtue, lost some vices. Consolidation, you have a tendency to lose your identity. the teacher doesn't know the child's problem, and so on. Now they got better instruction, but sometimes they don't administer it as well as we used to, I think. We've got an individual we've got to deal with. Now, before I was married, I'd go to these children's houses, and I knew where the child slept at night. I knew his dad and mother. I knew their daily habits. And I could just about tell you whether that child had enough breakfast or not. I recall one little girl came, she wasn't in my room. I was teaching a big two-teacher school then, you know. And this little girl came to school, and she appeared sick. She was just down and out, so to speak. Well, her dad had gone to school to me. I knew him. Her mother never had gone to school to me because I don't remember why. But anyway, this child appeared sick, and I was well enough acquainted to know that the child might have been neglected during breakfast. So we had a store right close, and we got a can of orange juice. You know, that child revived just like pouring water on a plant. That surprised me and pleased me, of course, that I was able to help the child. But I believe that child's stomach's just empty.
Well, what about technical changes? I mean, today you go to school and you have all these audiovisual aids and all this. Now, is that, I mean, it seems to me that that would be an advancement.
Yeah.
Would you say that that's so? Or would there be drawbacks to turning the student loose with the teacher and the TV or something?
There's no drawbacks that I could think about except the unusual registers. And that's getting so usual it's not registering well enough is what I've been thinking about. You know, a child, for instance, you serve a child lunch at school. Well, he becomes to expect that. It just don't register that he ought to provide it for himself.
Well, what about the situation today? We hear a lot about back to basics because Johnny can't read and this type of thing. What do you think the teachers in the earlier schools required more of the students? I mean, I know students today, many of them are have brilliant minds, okay, but there's so many more that's coming out of schools that can't pass just reading tests.
Well, I think that's largely the teacher's problem. Now, when I went out to teach, I didn't know how many words a child was supposed to read. I didn't know. Comprehension was emphasized. Speed was never mentioned. It took you twice as long to read a paragraph as it ordinarily ought to take. You aren't criticized for the reading. As long as you've got the thought from that printed paragraph or page. All right. If a child didn't get his lesson, we punished it. We were the sheriff, the judge, and all of it. And that was bad to send a boy out as ignorant as I was and put that responsibility on him. That was bad on the children. It was bad on me. But now children are not, we'll say, examined as thorough. Now, I was a head teacher at Luella. We had eight teachers there. And I bought a book. Put it in the library where the teachers have access to it. Told how many words a child's supposed to read per minute, and so on, up to a certain grade, you know, starting in the third grade. And we had some good teachers and some teachers that were bad. We had one of the best teachers there I'd like to talk about. And that best teacher was the only one that ever read that book that I found out. They'd sign up for it and take it home for it, need to, and read it. All right, that best teacher's name was the only one that I found her name on that list to check that book out.
Well, Would you say teachers today do not take teaching as seriously as teachers did in the past?
Well, it's really a hard question to answer. I'm inclined to believe they don't. Now, the more security we got, the less conscientious we are about our job. And we used not to have any security. If we didn't do the job, we had to give it up.
You mean tenure was not
That's
part
right.
of the...
Tenure was not part of it. And see, this first law I was telling you about, 1920, when they took the teacher's examination to Frankfort instead of leaving it in the county seat. Then 1940, they passed this teacher retirement law. So there's 20 years there that well, we didn't have any retirement law. And then, I don't know when the teacher tenure law came in, but now you've got a teacher's got a lot of protection you used not to have. And I think you can overprotect people, really. I'm inclined to believe that.
Tell me about grades. I mean, now, I know some, well, most schools, I imagine today, still give the A, B, C, D, F. But now some schools are going to this plus minus system, or average, above average, below average, this type thing. Did you all just give the ABC system? Was that?
That's the most common way we get.
Well, now today they do a lot of talking about you'll make a child feel inferior if he gets a C instead of an A, and his friend gets an A. And did you all think about problems like this?
I did. I don't know how common it was, but. Now, the most handicapped child that you can have in school is a child that's just unconscious of being handicapped. You see what I'm trying to say? Anybody that's is not completely goofy, if they're conscious, they are goofy. You see what I'm trying to say again?
You're just trying to say that you can always learn more, is it?
That's about it. But. Now, I've had parents come to me, now, you whip my boy or girl. You make them do this. Well, you take the IQ, if we call it that. That wasn't mentioned those days much, IQ wasn't. But you take the IQ of the parent and the child. The child's got to inherit something from his parents. And that child might not be capable of making good grades. So you can't take people seriously. Now, the ones that wanted me to punish their children the most were the most retarded parents.
What did they want their children to go beyond what
yes,
they had?
Beyond what they were capable of doing, I thought. Now, the first, I taught school for 2 years, and I'd say the first 30 years, we didn't have any standardized test. We just did it the best we could, and so that was bad because we didn't have a standardized test. And then the standardized test came in, and our children made low on that standardized test because of their vocabulary. A child might not understand the language that he's not used to. You see, and these standardized tests came from outside, and our children were really more scholarly than they got credit for because of their limited vocabulary, is what I think.
Well, how have the children from Harlan County, I mean, you mentioned Juanita Krebs, she goes out and she becomes what, Secretary of Commerce, okay.
Yeah.
How about other children from Harlan County and going on in their education? Have a lot of them went on to college? And
well, I'll give you a little example of that. Now, Holmes Mill, that's where I stayed 26 years, postmaster and school teacher and so on. And according to the population, I think you'll find more college degrees in that area than any other place in the county. Really. And they're like everybody else. They're not naturally retarded. We're not naturally retarded. We might be socially retarded. Now, Ms. Wells talked about a different society from what I've been used to associating with. See, now, during the Depression, Mrs. Wells talked about bridge, all right? She talked about dancing, which is, the lower class, drunk moonshine, and we call swing rabbits, and that's a old form of square dance, see. We kind of created our own entertainment, so to speak.
Now, when I spoke to Mrs. Wells, I asked her about the upper classes and lower classes. Did they blend? Now, she said they did blend. Do you think that they did?
They blended to a certain extent. Now, Ms. Wells, pardon me for saying this, Ms. Wells, I'd call her the upper crust. Now, she's a lady.
That's the impression I get also. And she seems very sophisticated to me.
She is sophisticated. All right. I came up from a scallywaggy bunch, see? And I think Mr. Chrisman, he's been with all of us. But I think there was a conscious subordination among some people. Don't you think so?
I think so, absolutely.
Now, you've probably read that book, She Stoops to Conquer. I don't think Miss Wells ever stooped. She's just been in her class, and she's a fine person. But there was some things that went on down here in this lower class that she's probably not conscious of. Like, the last few years I taught, I stayed busy. Well, these schoolboys wouldn't tell me what was going on. There's more moonshine liquor made in my district than I knew about. See, so a similar condition might exist in Ms. Wells. There's some low down stuff that she was unconscious about, maybe in society. But we had it. We had both classes in common. We had that. We had the low down bootlegging, homebrew drinking, and so on. That they wouldn't dare go to Miss Wells' home for a bridge party. You see what I'm trying to say?
Mm-hmm. So that presents a whole different side to the story.
That's right.
Well, we're just about to run out of time. Can you think of anything else that you'd like to add about education or the Depression or Cumberland in general?
Well, now, you asked when they had running water here, indoor toilets. That came around in the 30s. I moved away from here in 35, and they was in the process of ditch digging and stuff like that. Now we hear people, it's pretty hard. It's really hard to imagine when we say Arthur Creech was born. Not a yard of hard surface road in the county, no railroad, and I doubt if they'd begun to get out the timber here at that time. This old fella, Asher from near Pineville, I've heard of him all of my life. What a wealthy man he was. And he was one of the men that bought up the timber here and floated down to Wasio here somewhere down in Bell County. And this another character, Mr. Chrisman, might be able to tell us something about it, Ballard Thruston. You hear the name. Ballard Thruston bought up the walnut timber on Clover Park. And he was, I believe he was Thruston Martin. Where is his home?
Louisville.
Louisville. I think that's about where Ballard Thruston was from. But he had a reputation of being a good businessman.
Okay, thank you.